Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
It's episode 240 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
Hello.
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 Hello. So.
To be fair.
So.
Hey, by the by, just before we get going, a couple things. One, I'm just getting into that Rick Beato video on Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, yes.
That's great. So far, I've watched maybe 15 minutes. We're still like in the intro.
Oh yeah.
But the funny thing is, I saw the title was featuring Brian May.
Uh-huh.
I thought, oh, I wonder how he's going to work in Brian May, and then bam, there's Brian right. May talking about the song. I'm like, oh, nice. This is great.
And yeah, like the what makes the song greater are often fun, just because, you know, as a producer, he really knows what he's talking about. But like this one, I mean, it's one of the longest ones, but also it's the song and the fact that he got an interview with May and all this. Like, it just became something special.
Yeah, exactly. And I love hearing Brian May talk about Freddie Mercury.
Yes.
Because it's sort of like, because he's kind of, you can still hear his sort of befuddlement and awe over Mercury's talent. When he's like, yeah, he could just do anything. Like, he would just come into the studio and do absolutely anything, and we all, you know, everybody else could work together immediately. And I was just, that was really, I'm going to, after this podcast, I'm going to go back and finish it up. But I had a quick thought.
Okay.
I was making breakfast earlier, and Alan and I were listening to the Spilled Milk podcast. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Not really.
It's two hosts. It's a great podcast. They discuss an ingredient per podcast, or a food item, and then they taste different kinds. They talk about the history of it, et cetera, et cetera. This one was about steak sauce, but it's sort of at some point, for some reason, they got into talking about honeydew melon, which always reminded me of the, bar none, one of the cruelest and funniest jokes on BoJack Horseman. There's a running gag on BoJack Horseman about how he hates honeydew melon. And at one point he's talking with a relative of his, and he's like, there's honeydew here. And he's like, it always shows up. It's never invited, but it always shows up. And the other person says, it makes everything around it worse. It's like the Jared Leto of fruit.
Nice.
I was like, that always sticks in my mind, because I'm like, when did Jared Leto go from being like teen heartthrob to indie actor to Oscar winner to, oh fuck, it's Jared Leto?
Somewhere around the time of Teen Heartthrob, I believe.
Early on then.
I don't really remember a time when Jared Leto wasn't like, oh god, this dude. So maybe that's me and the circles I travel in, but
maybe so. Yeah, I'm just curious, because I mean, dude won, he was nominated, I think he won Oscar one point.
Sure.
And you know, and so I mean, he was like, you know, Jared Leto, serious actor, TM. But then, like now, every time I watch a movie and I know that, and I see that his name come up, I'm like, now we have to see.
Yeah, I think it was around the time he became serious actor, TM, and then believed it.
That's probably
himself. It. You know what I mean? Like, that's what did him in.
Right. Just another actor high on his own supply. All right.
Yep.
Well, that answers that.
I mean, just a guess.
Appreciate it. No, that's, I think you're probably right. But and of course, after Joker and then Blade Runner 2049, I think.
Oh God,
and,
yes.
And whatnot.
Well, Suicide Squad, like all of his bullshit behavior,
right.
Then,
yeah,
right? Like,
exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that wasn't. Yeah, what? I fucking care.
anyway.
So yeah, the weird thing with a little bit of a throwback, I guess, is of course there's the trailer for the new Matrix movie.
Did you watch the trailer?
I did.
Oh, okay. Because I know sometimes you don't like to
I usually watch like one, you know.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
And Matrix trailers never tell you anything, even if they feel like they are.
Well, I saw the complaints. This trailer tells us too much. I'm like, how do you know that?
Right, like they've never done that. I can't imagine they're going to start now.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to tell you just enough to mislead you.
Mm-hmm.
But it made me go back and you know remember like when I first saw the first movie, and then I was like, you know what, actually just go watch all three. Because I think like a lot of us, right, like you watched the first one and you were like, holy shit, this movie is great. And then like 4 years pass, and you watch the second one and you're like, what? And then right on the heels of that, like later that same year, you watch the third one and you're like, what?
Yeah. What with mechs?
Right, and I've watched them all like kind of before, obviously I've watched them again. But, you know, a lot of times when I'm like, oh, I want to watch Matrix, I'll just watch the first one. But watching them now, and specifically, like, this year, like, where we are with pop culture and everything else, I saw them in a whole different light that kind of stopped me cold for a minute.
Interesting.
Because above everything else, I realized that all the things we bitch about in the sequels are things that we have now come to expect and except in any superhero movie sequels.
Ooh, that's... I like your take.
They were, like, Matrix really was, like, the proto-Marvel series. Right?
That is fascinating. Yeah, I know.
I mean, the first movie is an origin story.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, and again, a lot of people will complain, like, oh, God, we spent all this time, and then, like, he only becomes a superhero at the end? Well, welcome to Matrix.
Yep.
And shit, like, early on, like, I think it might even be Smith, it's one of the agents, like, does this leap and does that fucking superhero landing. So, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
And then you go into the sequel, and of course, like, what are the terrible rules of a lot of superhero sequels? Not all of them fall into this trap. Not all movie sequels fall into this trap, but a lot of superhero sequels do, right? You have to up the stakes.
Mm-hmm.
You have to deviate from the straight path so you can start deepening the world, which means a whole bunch of elements that you're like, why wouldn't we have mentioned this before? Are suddenly mentioned as if they've always been there.
Yep, yep.
You've narrowed the cast from the first movie, but you've also introduced a whole bunch of new casts, but in a way that almost doesn't make sense.
They're just suddenly there. Yeah.
Cast has shrunk a little bit, so you now have your core.
Mm-hmm.
But the side cast is basically a lot of them are replaced.
Yeah.
You want to pay off stuff from the first movie that was like offhand, but you don't necessarily want to go too much deeper into it because now you have rules.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like they have all that problem of like you say shit offhandedly in one movie and then the next movie you're like, oh shit, I guess we have to do that. And then of course the third movie is, well, we have to up it again. Right? Like, we have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
But we also want some kind of conclusion that leaves the door open for if we want to do more. Just in case.
Exactly.
And, you know, we're going to use whatever kind of bleeding edge type technology we can and hope it still looks good in a couple years.
Right, exactly.
And realistically, like, yes, the three movies are very disparate in shape at first when you first look at them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize that they're really not, right? They're all saying the same thing.
Yeah, actually, I have more to say on that in a moment.
Okay. But also, like, they fall victim to the third act big fight that is, like, all CG.
Yeah.
And frankly, let's be honest, like, they were trying to do the let's replace this character with CG fully so we could do all the flying shit and all this before the technology was actually film ready. It was video game ready and they looked terrible from the start. But they didn't have a choice because they'd set that up.
Yeah.
I will say that probably my favorite, like, no one ever makes this complaint and I really kind of wish that they had. I understand it doesn't really fit, but it would have been fucking amazing. Is in the second movie, early on, right? They're all talking about this, and Neo goes upstairs, and there's like, you know, oh, he's like agents, and they come in, and one of them like blocks his kick, And you're like, what? They can do that now? Because obviously in the first movie, he just defeated them when he became
yeah.
the one.
Yeah, upgrades.
And he goes, huh, upgrades. Okay, now here's the moment I really wish had worked into that film. Everyone else who is hacking into the Matrix and doing the shit, who already couldn't deal with agents, were just like, okay, so this one asshole just made all of our lives harder. Because, like, now the agents are 10% worse. Which, for normal people, is just like, well, now you have less than no hope. Like, I mean, someone should have just really called him out, just been like, Neo, you dick! You weren't, like, you were the only one who could deal with these before, but, you know, you saw that, like, some people could kind of hold their own long enough to run. Mm-hmm. Well, that hope is gone now, thanks to him.
Yeah.
Motherfucker! Like...
The oh my god, yeah, no, that's I never really put it together that way. That is fantastic.
So what were your thoughts about they're saying the same thing?
I mean they I think the second and third ones very much are saying the same thing, but I think the first one is saying the same thing, but it feels like the Wachowskis looked at the response to the first movie and were like, I don't think people got this. You know, I don't think they understood exactly what they were watching, and they took it to be sort of a superhero origin story and not much more than that.
Right.
So in the second one, and you notice this, I think, right away in the second one, things are not magically solved.
Right.
Like, I remember feeling really dissatisfied when I was in the theater at first because Neo... I mean, there's the upgrades bit, but Neo just seems, like, suddenly underpowered. Like, I thought he could, like, you know, bend reality to his will now, or, you know, bend the Matrix to his will. But it seemed like they're saying, oh, that the Wachowskis basically said, oh, you people thought that, you know, overcoming an obstacle and finding yourself was the key to making everything better? Well, no. No, it is not. There's still things to do. There's still you can't just solve everything at once. You need to. There's setbacks. There's a grind, and I thought those two movies especially did a great job of showing that. Even yes. though at the time I was like, oh, this is weird. Did they forget? Did they forget your own film?
Well, it's
no,
funny
they
because,
did not.
Because I remember, like, you know, they were working comics before they did this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always kind of played off the movies as under comic rules. So it made sense to me that it's like, you know, like, look right. at the end of this, like, hooray! And then it's like, no, there's still shit.
Yeah.
So, like, that never got me. What got me originally wasn't so much like they you know, did this whole thing, but that in widening the scope of the films, it felt like they were losing the thread and then turning to, well, what if instead of doing a Kung Fu movie, we did a World War II movie? And it originally just felt like what it isn't, honestly, but it felt like they were flailing to try to find something else to do rather than show you that no matter how you view this, it's the same story.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I have a much bigger appreciation for a lot of the second and third now than I think I ever did. It just they make better sense from a distance. I don't
right.
know.
No, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, they've as the years have gone by, it's been, I think time has been a lot kinder to those movies, and I think also people were at the time maybe just a little bit oversaturated with having both movies come out in 1 year, and it was like, a
well,
little too much Matrix,
like,
thank you.
It's also like the first movie hit so hard.
Mm-hmm.
That by the time the second and third came out, everything was already trying to replicate the Matrix.
Exactly.
So they also just felt like more of what we were already getting, and
mm-hmm.
they weren't standing out in the same way, because you can't do that every time.
Yeah.
And the ways they tried to stand out, of course, were those CG effects that didn't really work.
Yeah, I mean, I admired what they were doing, for example, with the so-called Burly Brawl, where
right.
Neo is fighting all the Smiths. I was like, oh, that's a cool idea, but, like, you could see, but the limits became clear
right.
pretty quickly. Well, you know, there was no sort of weight to anything in that fight. You know,
yeah, no, and bodies twisted wrong, and it's one of those things of, like, now you can get away with it because with the accurate, like, shading, you ramp it up a little bit more, and you want that effect. But
right.
the way they were doing it, the lighting was very flat.
Mm-hmm.
because yeah. the lighting technology for computer generated stuff is really complex. And they just didn't have it then.
Yeah.
So, but again, without them trying it, we wouldn't have it now.
Well, you know, I found out something about the one of the other big sequences from that movie, and I didn't realize this. Like the highway chase, the freeway chase
yes.
scene. They built that whole freaking. I didn't know.
Have
that.
You never seen? There was a. There's like a set of documentaries.
I've watched them, but obviously I did not remember this part.
Yeah, no. One of them goes really big into the highway scene.
Yeah, and apparently they're like some of the cars were CG, but
God.
Some of them were real. And apparently Carrie Ann Moss just said, "Okay, I'll learn to ride a motorcycle
right.
against traffic."
I will say that I had an unintentional laugh watching the highway chase scene because there's a shot where the agent jumps off the hood of the car and the car starts to flip, and like cars behind it. Start to flip over, but you can see that the car behind it, like directly behind it, if you watch this, like not even carefully, just pay attention to that car for a second, it very obviously goes up on a ramp that like has been removed in post.
Oh, okay.
Because it just suddenly, like, the front end launches up into the air, into the side. I'm like, why? Like, what would it have hit? Nothing. Because the back of the car in front of it had lifted up. There's no physical way for the car behind it to have done what it did.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes me laugh.
Oh, man.
It's a silly thing. You know, it's not important. It doesn't take me out of the film, really. It's just, like I said, it's just one of those, like, yeah, some of this shit ages badly.
Yeah, and I suppose if you're a diehard Matrix fan, you could point to any flaw and say,
right.
but they're in a computer simulation. You
yeah,
know?
Of course. Of course, yeah. And that's fair. Yeah, no, the movies are just, I mean, obviously they're just fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is just tighter than I think a lot of people remember it.
Yeah.
Like, that is a tight fucking film. And
oh,
so
yeah.
many of the moments still, like, work. Like, in a way that you've seen them 20 times, but they still get that moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the, can you remove any metal, like, keys or anything like that? And then the holy shit.
Yeah.
It's still just such a great bit. You know, the helicopter catch. Like, even when he's just, he just starts looping his arm around it, and you cut to, like, Morpheus looking at him like, the fuck? You know, it's just...
One thing I noticed that I hadn't noticed before, like, the last time I watched it, there's that simulation scene which introduces the woman in the red dress.
Yes.
And you know this already, or maybe you caught it, but if you look at the people, the extras walking
yeah.
in the crowd, a bunch of them are twins.
All of them. Except for her.
All of them. I didn't
yeah.
realize
all
I of them.
I think it's all of them. It's either all of them or like 99%. Like, it's something like that. Like, they just cast twins. Because, again, one of the documentaries went into it. I remember when I first saw it, I was just like, oh, that's fucking genius.
Yeah. Good way
yeah.
good way to conserve... conserving resources in the Matrix or in the simulation.
Right.
But also a great lesson for how we... When we watch... How easy it is for us to only pay attention to the thing that the filmmakers are pointing at and not to see what's literally in front of our eyes. So,
right, which well, is also the main, like, that's, yeah.
That's the Matrix.
It works on every possible level.
Yeah. And also, I think that line, really good noodles, kind of hit me hard. I don't know why.
Yeah.
That sort of that little bit when he's saying, you know, I used to eat there. Really good
like,
noodles.
I have issues. I still have weird issues with their timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that gets washed away with the, you know, well, we've reset this before, right?
Right.
But the idea of like, okay, well, we know that this current reset has been about 100 years, they think.
That's what they think, yeah.
Right. Okay, but if it's been about 100 years, let's just say, how did they develop this technology? Like the hovercraft to build the city, like that, all that, that takes more than 100 years. And I was just always like, also... At 100 years, there should be somebody left alive who's like, yeah, motherfucker, I was the one last time. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I knew Bob.
Right.
Like, it's too short a scale, and I see why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's too short a scale.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's something in the mythology that makes that work in terms of like, well, when they reset it, the people who first did it are ashamed of it. So they don't want to mention it, so it gets buried, and you have, like, a generation that just never discusses it, and then decides this is our story. So you push it out to like 170 years, and like they already knew the technology. You can make it work, but for me the problem is like that's a weird one that you have to make work, otherwise it doesn't make any sense.
I agree. Yeah, but I mean, that's another thing I really enjoyed from the second, third movie. I love the sort of heavy metal magazine sort of visuals of Zion. I remember seeing that in the theater. I'm like, oh, I love this so much.
It's great design.
Mobius and stuff, you know, whoever. Yeah. And another thing I like that everybody seems to hate from Reloaded, I like the big orgy rave. I just love that scene.
It's embarrassing.
It's cheesy as hell.
It's fucking like MTV, like beach. It's just... It's not good. It's not a good scene.
See,
I'm sorry.
Nobody likes it. Nobody likes it. But
it really is just like, it's like slow motion, like 90s rave, except this movie was 2004. It's like a slow motion 90s rave with like an awkward sex scene tacked into it. And just neither end works. Like, I see what they were going for.
Mm-hmm.
But just, it just ends. Yeah, it's like, I kept wanting it to, like, cut to, like, you know, like, it's an Aptiva commercial or something. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that poor scene.
Maybe I just like seeing everybody have a good time.
Sure. Oh, sure. No, and I don't mean to make fun of it, cause, like, but it really is just, it is the awkward scene.
It is. I mean, it really, yeah, it is. About as awkward as those movies get. Yeah.
Well, because it also weirdly seems to be like, well, you know, when they're, because they mentioned like the Neb almost never comes back, right? Like half as much as all the other ships.
Right.
And they live on this ship, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Trinity and Neo get off the ship, and suddenly they're like, oh good, we're finally off the ship. We can have sex. And I'm like, you guys have private quarters on the ship. Everyone on the ship, which by the way is one other person right now. Well, two, I guess. No, y'all are fucking. Like, it just, and that's, it's like, it just, it felt like such a false note to, like, push this specific angle.
Mm-hmm.
That I was just like, no, now you're just reaching for it. Like, how do we get to orgy rave? Like, it's just, stop.
That's, sorry. Yeah.
Also, like, who, like, I, maybe, and again, this is petty, but they obviously have people who, like, you know, run looms and shit, right? Because all their clothes are being made in Zion, I would assume.
I imagine so.
Okay, and everyone who has a loom who knows how to knit, A, has trouble with stitching at a certain point in the neck, and B, only know how to knit one sweater.
Yeah, there's a certain uniformity with their. I mean, obviously they've only got one store they go to.
Like, weirdly enough, you know what I would have? And again, this is petty shit, right? This is all, I admit, this is all very petty shit. But you know what I really would have liked?
Mm-hmm.
Is if they had done the fisherman sweater, like the cable sweater, the way the fishermen used to do it.
Uh huh.
So that, like, every sweater for, like, certain ships was a different pattern. So that, like, if you got lost at sea or something like that, people would know what ship you were from.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Huh.
And, like, that would have been cool, right? I suppose it doesn't really matter. Again, I know it's petty. It's just one of those weird things.
Fair enough.
And it's such a small note. And in most movies, I would be like, I wouldn't even consider it. But because they took such painful care with so much of it,
right?
I will say that the whole like Neo no mouth effect still works really well.
Mm-hmm.
Although God, those phones! I don't know if you remember, like the first phone that they used in the first movie with that little shink, you know,
button
display thing, was just a phone that like Nokia made,
right?
And it was actually a limited phone because no one liked it until The Matrix.
Oh.
Well, because back then everyone had brick phones, and no one wanted to be like, I have to press a button, and then it makes this fucking chink noise every time, just so I can hit a fucking button? Like, seriously? If I want to pick up my phone, I have to do this thing? Like, fuck you, I just have a thing. But after The Matrix, it was a big deal, and then I think it was Motorola had that deal to, like, develop the new Matrix phone.
Oh,
as a tie-in. And that phone in the second movie is so bad. Like it tries to look like this is a phone from like the Nebuchadnezzar, and it's like it makes no sense. And it's just, it's a hideous goddamn phone. And I remember when I saw the movie, I was just like, oh, they went from like sleek and cool to whatever the fuck that's supposed to be. And then it's like, oh, it's a tie-in. And now every time, it's like, yeah. Well, it's like in the garage scene, the garage, you know, they steal the car and the whole blah, 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 with the key master. That's his name. And the gatekeeper and Zool. Wait, no, wrong movie. But they steal the car, and I just remember, and again, not the movie's fault, people do this all the time, but I just remember there were a bunch of car ads, because that was like, they were doing the new car, and had a tie-in to help pay for it. And it was like, look at this new model, whatever, like I've seen in The Matrix. And like shit like that just sticks out in my head sometimes, and it makes me laugh when I watch the movie. I'm just like, yeah, look, our car can run from mythological creatures from The Matrix.
Nice. Oh my god, I'd forgotten about the car tie-in bit.
Yeah, like, those tie-ins make me laugh. I don't know.
If the Matrix, instead of using like cell phones at all, they just had to carry around like big rotary phones and like look for like phone jacks.
Well, and I mentioned this on Twitter, but I had the sudden thought of the Matrix, they're gonna have an interesting problem now.
Uh-huh.
Because there are almost no landlines.
I was gonna say, get to the payphone. Where?
Right. Well, I made that joke too. Like, you know, this whole like, it's not an exit. Like right. Well, and that's it. It's like there are almost no payphones in America. There are still like a few in like Russia, but like there are almost no payphones, and that's actually not like a dig at Russia. There just actually are. There are almost no payphones, but also like all landlines now, almost all of them are through like your internet service provider. Like they're using the internet lines, not hard phone lines.
Right.
So if there's something like you could do that, I'm like, well, then you don't need a phone or a landline, so fuck you. Like, if they try pulling that.
Mm-hmm.
So I am curious how they're going to do this. Or, again, if they end up with the Matrix, like, it's a different world where there is this stuff still, and fuck you, and I'll be fine.
Yeah, I think that's probably something they would have thought of. Or at least,
of course.
Lana would.
I'm just curious for the solve, more than anything. Yeah, like, I'm just literally curious to see how they solve it.
Because there's a point in the trailer in which Neo is, or Thomas Anderson, is in, I think he's in an elevator, and everybody's on their phones.
Yes.
And there's a sort of ominous moment, and that great sort of shot where he's sort of looking up, and there's...
And the reflection,
like in the reflection. Although I wouldn't put it past Lana Wachowski to simply hang a bunch of people upside down and do it that way. In fact, I am 75% sure that's what she did.
Nice.
And I'm going to hope for it. Yeah, I'm really curious as to what they're going to do with that as well. Like, and whether the Matrix that we're familiar with from the first movies, whether it even exists in the same fashion now,
right.
or what the purpose is of what's clearly the simulation, I would like to know. I guess I have to wait till Christmas.
Yeah, no, and again, like, I love that they can come back all this time later and still do a thing that has us all going, okay, but what does it mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's been their game since the first one, and they've kept it up.
Yeah.
I also do appreciate the people who are like, you know, Morpheus can't come back. That's why they didn't bring Fishburne back, because he died in this video game. And I'm like, okay, did you forget that Trinity died too?
Yeah, I know.
Like, and so did Neo. Like, we could have brought him back. Like, they're doing something specific here.
Exactly.
And it's sad because Lawrence Fishburne is amazing.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to see what the game is. You know,
oh,
also,
too.
Of course, like Hugo Weaving couldn't make it because of timing, so we're not going to have a Smith, which frankly, I think is good because that is my one other complaint about the sequels.
The Smith of it all?
If you remove from Reloaded, if you remove the Smith stuff from Reloaded, you actually get a tighter, better film.
Huh.
But you don't need it, right? Like, the second movie is all, okay, well, how do we end this war? And it's all, how do we get, like, to this guy who has the keys, to get to the engineer, to get to this, to get to that? That's
right.
The second movie.
Right.
And then you just kind of have Smith intruding on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it never really functions well. Like, it never becomes the, oh, we should all deal with this together. And that's what the third movie is, and I understand that if you don't see the Smith stuff in the second movie, you can't get to the third.
Right.
Like, you need to seed enough Smith in the second movie to get to the point where he can infect a real person.
Exactly.
And I get that, but it's still, it's one of those, like, it's almost a shame. Because, God, that movie works better without the Smith stuff.
Hmm. That, I never thought of that.
Yeah, it's just a weird note.
I could at least do without the Burly Brawl. That,
Jesus. Yeah, that just, the longer it goes, the worse it works every time. Yep.
I know. I mean, it's fascinating to watch it sort of unfold and escalate, and you're like, no.
And just go more and more uncanny valley as it goes.
Stop. Yeah.
Like, I kind of want to push it, like, keep going like another 10 minutes until they're just like drawn stick figures in like stop motion. The longer they fight in the Matrix, the more they're unraveling the Matrix. You're just like regressing.
And until finally it's just Lily and Lana Wachowski holding like paper mache figures, just kind of bumping them into each other exhaustedly.
Okay, but tell me that wouldn't be amazing.
That would be fantastic. No, I will not argue on that one.
All right. Oh, because we also have a short show this week, which is my fault.
Short show.
We should probably go and talk about the one other big thing I think that we want to talk about this week, which
the
is
leggings.
Of course the leggings, the leggings of tomorrow.
The leggings. Welcome to the leggings of tomorrow.
So, with GPS, what did you think?
What did they? You know, it was a lot of what I wanted from a Legends finale.
Yeah.
It was plenty of heart. There was like it was all bookended around a wedding. Like they needed to get married to defeat the big, you know, the
right,
evil
with the power
aliens.
Of love, which
with the power,
you know,
of love.
Like, last time was Bebo.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, wow, this is just pure Legends. Also, a little bit of funny trivia. At one point, Nate says, let's schmiance this or something.
Yeah.
And I follow a guy, a bitter script reader on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
And he's a writing assistant on Superman and Lois.
Yes.
And he says, that's schmiance is actually the word that the writer's room uses for, like, we'll
yep.
schmiance it. I'm like, nice. This is like the bovine McFeely of Legends.
It is.
Or the phlebotinum from Buffy. But anyway, yeah, that was, I love that. I wasn't quite certain about the, as always, when shows have to like shuffle characters off, they always seem to do it sort of in like just this sort of, just a few lines. But I wasn't sure about John Constantine not being dead after all, but then going, I've got a different path to walk.
Okay.
I'm like,
okay. I want to talk about that.
Yes.
Because I did see a complaint that was like, why did they bring him back at the end when he had this good, you know, this whole like, oh, he dies, and he's, right?
Wait, I mean, I'm actually curious. That's obviously done for a reason, right?
I can tell you, like, honestly, if they don't do that end scene, it is not a good Constantine story.
Fair enough.
Because, right? Like, this is the Constantine of it all for me. That made, like, that end scene made all of it work. Because here's Constantine, like, we see him in kind of the spirit world, and he's like, yeah, the mushroom thing kind of hates me now, but he's, like, all in white and kind of at peace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not Constantine.
Yeah, I know.
But that, he goes from that to being like, well, I guess I'm dead now, and you know he's going to hell. And in his, he's just like, well, I guess I'm going to make a deal to come back. So I'm going to have to sell my soul again. And now I'm going to have to deal with that bullshit. But if I involve these people with me, it's just going to go south the way it did. This is the Constantine has no friends for a reason moment.
True.
But also cuts the people out of his life who would be willing to help him because he feels like he doesn't deserve it.
That is very Constantine.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, he's just enough of a bastard to be like, yeah, you think death is going to stop me from, like, doing a dick move? No. But also, fuck y'all, peace, I'm out. And everyone else is left standing going, wait, but we were just, like, mourning, and now you're just leaving? And he's like, yep. It's just, like, that is just so pure Constantine for me.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think I agree with you. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that they threaded the needle on that, though.
That's fair.
I mean, it's fine. Like, it's fine. I understand, but it's just like, but they were kind of up against it, you know, with that move.
Right. I mean, and I think that's the thing. It's like, it worked for me. I think it worked for a lot of, like, big Constantine fans who are just fans of that character outside of all this.
Mm-hmm.
That I think all of us were just like, yeah, no, you need that. Like, at what point does it... Because I kept waiting. I was like, when does he come back? And he's just like, well, now I have to go deal with some more shit, because you think it came back easy?
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of kept waiting for it, because I'm like, John Constantine doesn't find peace.
Right.
Like, it just... That's not how it works. And so I was just kind of waiting for it. So I think that they kind of tacked that on, knowing that it wouldn't quite sell for everyone, but that people would be okay with it, and the people it did sell for it needed it.
Fair enough.
Like, there's at least one huge Constantine fan on that writing team.
Yes.
Who was just like, no, 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 no. Not bastard enough. You know, just had a little bit more.
Yeah, when he said, oh, yeah, I sold my soul, I'm like, oh, shit, another deal.
Of course okay. You did.
Of course. Yeah, so there was that, and of course we have. I think Dominic Purcell is not exiting the show completely. I think he's going to be recurring.
He's talking like he's gone for good, unless they ask him back, and they're talking like, well, we might ask you back.
Oh, okay. So we may see him.
Yeah, we'll probably see him like once or twice. Like, I think if they haven't done the 150th episode yet, right?
True.
Are they close to it? I forget how that works.
I can't remember. Yeah, how far?
Let me see if I can find out, because I forget if they're like really close or they just passed it. Yeah, I don't. Oh, hold on, let me do a little bit of fucking math. Because of course they've like almost never had the same number of fucking episodes per season.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Without the special, which I don't think really well, that weird episode for season 5. They're at 96. If we count that, they're at 97. So season 7 will see 150th. My guess is if they're allowed to use Constantine, they will bring him back for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But past that, we'll see everyone except for Hawkgirl.
Oh, well, that's... I guess, why no Hawkgirl?
Do you really need that answered?
Fair enough. Okay.
I love that someone was like, you know, it might have been the AV Club, someone that was looking at some review, and someone was like, yeah, you know, like ever since they got rid of like Hawkgirl, someone's like, use her real name, Barista.
I was a barista. How many fucking times?
Right,
that,
it's,
say that?
Yeah. Yeah, no, just we can not bring back Hawkgirl. But I have a feeling like we'll bring back Ray.
Yeah, that'll be all right.
You know, just for a minute, we'll bring back Rory. Like that, you know, I think the show's going to have fun with its 150th. But yeah, that's coming up.
One of the things I enjoyed from that finale was that little sort of valedictory scene with Sarah and Mick on the porch, sharing a bottle, and just basically sort of in a very sort of meta but not winking moment, just sort of saying, man, who would have thought, like, this is like the two original cast members going,
right,
who would have thought we'd be here, like, you know, this far down the line, you know, like how much we've changed. I'm like, yeah, a lot.
Right.
it was such a funny moment. And it's just emblematic of everything that Legends has become.
I also enjoyed the entire scene where we're going to keep switching powers for honestly no good tactical reason.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was
like outside of the, like, fantastic. Oh, we need to like heal this person. After like that little bit, it just became this is funny. You know, mm-hmm. Just because everyone knew how to use everyone else's powers instinctively.
Yeah.
It's just, fine, it's fine. It's Legends, like, it's all good.
And then Shinji's dad showed up and turned them all into primordial goop.
Nice. Yeah, no, Legends did a thing, all right.
Yeah,
that was actually, I'm gonna call it now. The 150th episode is gonna have Bebo in it.
It better fucking have Bebo in it.
And maybe even Professor Stein.
Ooh, all right. I was actually wondering if Victor Garber would pop up.
I feel like he might, like even if it's just a voice.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think of the season as a whole?
I will say, like, if you remember early on, I was kind of like, huh, it feels like this Constantine thing was tacked on weirdly. Because we were doing the whole space, like, Bishop thing, and then we get into this Constantine addiction thing, and it felt like they just learned that they were losing the character.
Right. Yeah, I remember you saying that.
And it didn't feel cohesive. And then, like, an episode or two later, they're like, and here's how that works. And I think, again, like, I think it was split a little weirdly.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't always work, but again, like as a legend season goes, like no, this was a damn solid legend season.
Yeah, I know they when they brought that together, and all dumb like the people basically tripping on shrooms, which I thought was also great.
God, that line reading of "We're all connected" is just fucking perfect.
Oh, that was delightful, and it turns out to be what saves them.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
It's legends.
Yeah, it's legends.
All right. Well, sadly, I have a hard stop, so we're going to have a short little show today.
Fair enough.
And a yelling cat. But we'll be back next week with more thoughts on things and stuff and actual TV instead of, like, 20-year-old movies.
Woohoo! Sounds great.
Woohoo! Music!
Music!